Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Cheeseheads. Welcome to another episode of the Cheese Room Podcast. It has been a while since we last did a pod. I hope you're having a lovely festive period, and if you believe in Santa, that he brought you everything you requested. Joining me to discuss the game against Brentford today, all the way from South London, is Mr. Paul Muir. How are you doing, Paul?
Yeah, not too bad. It's been a while, and it's good to be back after the sideshow of the World Cup. But yeah, enjoyed that today, and looking forward to chatting with you two fine fellows about it.
Sadly, the after effects of the World Cup are still lingering with several players out today. We'll obviously discuss that in a bit more detail. Also joining all the way from up north, Mr. Seb Short. How you doing, Seb?
Yeah, I'm good. Good to get back to Premier League football. I have to agree with Paul's comment. I felt it was a sideshow, the World Cup, and now we're back to the real football.
The problem is, isn't it? It's like I've watched a few games today, and already I think the quality of the games I watched today was far more entertaining than many, many, many of those World Cup games.
Exactly that. Maybe we'll do like a 2-minute review of the World Cup, but yeah, that would be my take.
Yeah, all right, fine. Do you want to do your 2-minute review now?
Seb? More scripted, isn't it? I think bang average, to be honest, and I'll tell anyone that who tries to tell me that it is the best World Cup. Admittedly, the final, most of which I missed because I was watching a pantomime. appeared to be very good, but I would say Holland, Argentina, England, France, and France, Argentina were the only games where two quality teams came together to actually try and win a game. And the rest of it, I thought, was either a mix of defensive football, playing for draws like Croatia, or just a hodgepodge of missed opportunities and not very good football. I think some of the bigger teams now are really struggling, and that's what got pretty crap teams, I've got to be honest, in Morocco and Croatia, as well as others, through to semi-finals or quarter-finals, whatever. There was a lot of poor football on show. There you go. There's my take.
Any more something more bright to say about it, Paul?
I quite enjoyed Morocco. I thought they played fairly decent. There was a couple of good players there as well. I think Ziyech had a very good tournament. I've got to admit, I didn't watch a lot of it, to be honest. I caught the games as and when I could. I saw some of the England games. I think we looked okay. Obviously, you know, as it's been done to death now about the Kane penalty and stuff, it's slightly unfortunate. But overall, I thought the final was superb, but the rest was pretty bang average, as Seb says. Really, it was just the wrong time, and obviously the reason the tournament came around, just couldn't get behind it for the timing, and also because of the all the shenanigans, like, you know, 8 or 9 years ago when it was awarded. So overall, yeah. I still stick by it as being a sideshow.
Fair enough. I mean, the thing for me as well was that Kane thing. It was just like, why does that have to happen? Like, probably the worst thing that could happen apart from an injury is like some psychological damage. But I think one thing we can take from it is that Kane's a pretty resilient guy. And even something as crushing as missing a penalty that sees your team, you know, leave a major tournament like that, I think he's going to bounce back for it. I wasn't really too concerned. If it had been probably any other of our players, I would have been bothered. But, you know, I think Kane's got a bit of metal about him.
He's definitely got that psychological strength. He's going to bounce back from that. Like, watching him today, he looks a little bit rusty. But as we'll come on to, the goal he took was really, really, really nicely taken. Really good you know, well directed back across the goalkeeper. Thought he played well in fits and starts. He's obviously not back to where he was yet, but I think he, you know, I don't think it's going to be much of a hangover for him psychologically from the World Cup. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, agreed. Right, looking at the lineup, as we always do, quite a few changes today. I just can't get past. I know you're going to want to rant about this as well, Paul. No Romero even on the subs bench. At least Lloris made it there. Perisic, you played like, what, a day before in the third and fourth playoff. He managed to get there and he's, what, 33, 34 years old. I don't really understand it. And Lloris either. I mean, I know it's an opportunity to play your second string goalkeeper in probably the only game he's going to play this year, but I didn't see that Lloris needed to miss out as well. So there's a few changes that I didn't think were necessary today.
That back line, even before the game, when you saw Jaffa in there as well, kind of filled me a little bit with not kind of like, you know, dread or anything like that, but it's just like, Jaffa in there. And then obviously Longley as well, who didn't play that well before the World Cup started. Yeah, I was surprised that Lloris didn't slot back straight back in, really. Maybe just a psychological kind of, he didn't feel kind of like, you know, focused enough yet. Maybe Conte's promise forced. I don't know. I don't know, really. But it was surprising, certainly, to see Jaffa in a back three. I know Sanchez didn't do too great with both of the friendlies during the Nice. And I think I can't remember if he played against Motherwell or not, but he didn't look great. So I can see why, he didn't start today. But yeah, Jaffa was a real worry. And as it transpired, was pretty poor today. But it was just the back three that kind of like worried me a wee bit when I saw the lineup.
Yeah. So what do you think about the midfield as well? Obviously missing Bentancur with a slight injury. Not too sure how much longer he's going to be out for.
Was Bentancur banned?
I thought he was. Yeah, he's suspended. He's suspended.
Yeah.
Oh, he's suspended as well. But he did pick up an injury in the World Cup, surely.
They said that he will definitely be back for Villa. Just this game. Yeah, the midfield is what we'd expect. I think with Bentancur out. Obviously Bissouma comes in and fills that role. But I was concerned by the entire lineup, as Paul said. I would have obviously wanted to see Lloris there. I think Tanganga, look, I don't know, but maybe it's a trial almost. I can't see. Yeah, I think he's his sixth choice centre back. I think he showed today just how immature is the wrong word, but that is kind of what I'm searching for in his performance. In that, I think he'd been told to get really tight to Tony, and there were a couple of occasions actually where the ball came through that Brentford played it through, and he nipped round the side, or he nipped kind of behind but round the side, if you like, to kind of nip the ball away. A couple of times I was like, okay, and then Tony, obviously because he's a very good player, understood what was going on and adjusted his game, moved 2-3 feet away from Tanganga, and who then charged into the back of him because he's trying to make up the space to get the ball, gave away free kick after free kick. And it's that immaturity of not being able to adjust your game to, you know, that's what good players do. You know, if something's not working, you realise, you change it. And he just carried on the same. And yeah, he'll be very disappointed with his performance and obviously got hooked. With regards to the rest of the lineup, I guess it's what you'd expect. And when you've got the players out that we have in Lucas and Bentancur and obviously Romero, I don't think there was a lot more that we expected to see, really.
No, that's fair. What about the formation itself, Paul? Obviously, Brentford packing three in the middle against our two. And we've talked about this many times over the season, about the issues it caused. And today, it probably did a little bit as well, didn't it, in the midfield battle?
Yeah, first half was overrun. They were just patting us on the head and saying, good lad, you just stay there while we pass around you. It was really annoying, that first half. We just looked intensity. We've been through this as well before lots of times. So let's just quickly go through some 30, 45 seconds. There was no intensity. When we did get the ball, Bissouma couldn't progress it more than 10, 15 metres without it going out or going towards Conte or going to a player who played for Brentford and not Tottenham Hotspur. Obviously their midfield is workmanlike, but to keep saying, you know, like, you know, hard work's going to beat talent when talent doesn't want to even like put any effort in, not even get out of work, but put any effort in. And we were just well off it. So I would say that the formation with one man less certainly compounded an issue. But our main issue was that we just weren't intense enough in that first half.
Yeah, this is the thing. I think I made a comment on the Facebook page straight after, which is we're all hoping that after this World Cup, things were going to change. We were going to come back a bit rejuvenated and things were going to click a bit more. But it was the same issues again, it felt like today, Seb. Lack of intensity, slow start, and we had to go behind in order to fucking start moving.
They looked to me like they all looked to each other for the inspiration.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's, you know, look, our best player, obviously, on any given day is Kane, and it came up saying he had 10 touches. You can't get the ball to him, then you can't expect him to dig you out of a hole. And I thought from 1 to 11, actually, I thought we were pretty poor. Son kind of brightened up a little bit, but held on to the ball far too long when he did get in good positions. Kulu, and he was decent, to be fair. But the rest of them, they just looked like no inspiration at all. No one really kind of driving it forward or taking charge. Look, we've covered this. This is going back 6 weeks, 8 weeks, however long. You know, people say Dyer's a leader. There's no leadership at the back. There's nothing there. Tanganga, Dyer and Longley does not frighten you if you're Ivan Toney, or as the commentator on my Amazon Prime stream said, Brian Bumo. I don't know how you get Bumo out of MBEUMO, but she was sure it was Brian Bumo. They don't frighten you. And look, we'll cover Højbjerg maybe a little bit later, because I felt as he got into the game and as he did kind of grab the game by the scruff of the neck, things got better for us. But yeah, it's, as Paul said, it's two in the middle. It really handicaps us. It doesn't matter who you play against in the Premier League. Two, three in the middle is going to cause you some problems.
Yeah, I also think there was plenty of times when Bissouma and Højbjerg were both quite deep, wanting to take it off the defence. And I was thinking, we've got Perisic, Longley, Dyer, Højbjerg and Bissouma all around the ball on the halfway line.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? You need some players in front of you to receive the ball to get something going.
The first half particularly, Højbjerg played facing his own goal the majority of the time. And like you say, he was on Dyer and Longley's toes pretty much. And there was one point where Dyer and Højbjerg played 5 yard passes to each other four times from the edge of the area and back. From Dyer to Højbjerg, back to the edge of the area, back to Højbjerg, back to Dyer, and in the end, Dyer just lumped it. And it was like, what are we doing?
That's where we do miss Romero, because he can bring the ball out, can't he? Actually, give Dyer some, as the kids say, put some respect on Dyer's name. But it's about kind of bringing the ball out for centre of defence and actually committing one of those kind of like three of either Janssen, Norgaard or Jano to try and come and get the ball off you, and that will free up one of our midfielders. We do miss Romero when he, because he can carry the ball quite well, and Dyer can as well. I mean, he showed it in the second half as well that he can do that. He can stride out into the middle of the park and he can play 10, 15 meter, 20 meter ball either into like someone's feet or out wide to either like Kulusevski or even Perisic on the other side, or Son on the other side, excuse me. That's what it seems to me is like, you know, there is nobody willing to like kind of like commit an opposition midfielder when it's because if they've got two or three people trying to get the ball off you, one of our guys just got to make a passing angle and we're out. It just seems really basic and we don't seem to do that. And I think a really good ball playing centre back in the mold of someone like Christian Romero next to him would be really, really useful. I mean, God, you know, minister of the bloody obvious, Paul, but it's, you know, that we are missing someone who can bring the ball out and bring it into the middle of the park from centre back. I think it's a key issue that we've got to address that as well. Romero can do it, as I said, but we need someone else who can do it.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think that's it. The commentator said at one point that you can see with Brentford, they've got a really good sort of understanding of their movement and where they're going to be. And then you're just looking at Spurs thinking, we don't. Like, still, it's been a long time now. And I feel like a lot of these players don't have that sort of connection and knowledge about sort of who's going to be making runs and who should be going where, et cetera, et cetera. That first half was difficult to watch at times. Mm-hmm. And then obviously they get a very early goal, 15 minutes. And it was just frustrating, wasn't it? It was entirely avoidable. And obviously there's a bit of fortune when Jensen put it across, because he looks like he's trying to put it across. Obviously gets the deflection, then Forster has to make a save and just go straight into Jan Elt's path. So even that had some fortune to it, didn't it, Paul?
Yeah, but if you look at the build-up to that goal, I'm not going to go too hard in on Jaffer, but he's never going to win that ball against Tony Nflikon, and then we're always playing catch up at that point. Sometimes a defender, you've got to realise. I mean, I'm not a Premiership defender in any shape or form, but we've all watched the game enough to think, right, I can't get that, so I'm gonna let him have that one, and then I'm just gonna drop off and then try and pick up a second ball or cover any kind of like forward play from that Tony Nflikon, but just. Jaffa gets kind of like sucked in there, and then we're playing catch up. That's what I was really disappointed about. And then we all seem to like get attracted to the ball, and it's actually, I think Perisic is playing catch up as well. Like he should be covered, coming around on that back stick, and he's nowhere to be seen. And he's in Basuma is actually nearer to the actual goal scorer in the end than the guy who like knocks it into and gets deflection. It's just really poor. It could be so easily avoided. That's what I'm getting at. It could be so easily avoided.
Take it back further than that, I can. I think it's Son and Kane in the centre circle who can try to lose the ball. One trying to find the other. I can't quite remember who. But it kind of encapsulates what... Look, I can't offer a solution, but what is kind of wrong with some of the way that we play, in that if you look when we lose the ball, Doherty is banging forward over the... He's well over the halfway line. And then the turn he's got to make and get back, he's nowhere near the play. And really, on that side of the pitch, that's his player. But because of the formation that we play, it's not his player. Tanganga's come out as a wide centre-back, if you like, which it's just, everything's just a little bit confused. And then, as you say, it's there's kind of like a comedy of errors or mishaps, some of which that aren't our fault. You know, I can't really blame Forster for that goal. No. It just kind of showed up how kind of out of position we can be on a quick turnaround. And that's the problem that I have with, I know it's not going to change. I know this is a pointless conversation, but this three at the back and the wing backs bombing on, you know, they absolutely play as extra strikers, and we see it because we score so many goals, but bloody hell, now our defensive record is appalling. Over the last, I read something like this is, it's the eighth game in a row we've conceded, and six of those times we've conceded at least two. I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah, it is. I think the other thing is, well, because Tony had that chance right at the end of the half. I know he was offside, but he was only slight, but he was just running through. There was absolutely nobody near him. We seem to have these moments of where we just lose concentration.
I think it's getting caught as well. I don't just think it's concentration. I think it's getting caught on the quick turn. We bomb. We send so many players forward, and in my mind, unnecessarily so. Sometimes when you look at our attacking play, and it's Doherty or Emerson or whatever, and they're making up that extra man in the box, and they never get it, you know, or very rarely, you know. All right, they might create a bit of carnage or whatever, but sometimes just stay. Play as a defender. You know, primarily that's your role, but it will never happen. You know, I'm not saying that we will change it, because we won't. Conte knows one way of playing by the looks of it. And there is pretty much one tactic or one formation. You know, occasionally we put an extra man in midfield, but it's kamikaze in some respects. And I think the first goal showed that. And some of the when going back to the last game against Leeds, I thought all of the Leeds goals showed that. So we just get caught, turned, suddenly we've got two or three defenders. And when you're saying, oh, it looks like lack of concentration, I'm not sure it is. It's lack of numbers sometimes. Yeah, it's, I mean, you're 2-on-3 and, you know, it's crazy. And the numbers support it. You know, the amount of goals we're conceding, and yes, the amount of goals we're scoring, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's probably not what we expected from Conte, it must be said. We were expecting some sort of like low scoring, grinding out games.
Control would be nice.
Yeah, some control would be good. We saw out the rest of the half. I think we had a few chances, Son, Kulu, but they were nothing because I don't really remember them. I think they were hit straight at the goalkeeper from memory. And yeah, and then the half sort of petered out. Second half starts and, you know, we're trying to get back into it. And then we just, the worst defending from a corner I've seen in absolutely ages, wasn't it, Paul? Tonal just not working whatsoever. Nobody reacting, nobody picking up Tony when he's just wandering in. And he was pretty much their only player near the ball, but still managed to get on the end of it with about five Spurs players around him.
Are we going to avoid the reason why it was a corner.
Yeah, well, look, Eric Dier does a shinner at least every three games. This one was a terrible one, though, wasn't it?
I'm not going to go in on Eric because someone quite important to me really, really likes him. But he's going backwards at the moment, Eric Dier, and it's actually quite concerning. But anyway, yeah, moving on to the corner. You can't play zonal and leave Højbjerg on the back post. It unsettles everything. Mm. You can't do it. So I don't know what he's doing there. And as the commentators like to say, Brentford get first contact, I think it's called now. And then, yeah, and then Tony's literally on his own with Højbjerg pointing at him and that sticking out a leg and puts it in. It was horrible. It was really, really horrible. Just like, yeah, we were knowing it. Doherty is like a day too late to try and intercept. And then, yeah, and then Doherty just runs into the 6-yard box. And just sticks his left leg out and it goes in the goal. And, it's a good number 9's goal from his point of view. But, it could be avoided. It's so many areas. I don't know how many we've conceded now at corners. It seems quite a lot. I know we score a lot from set pieces at the moment, or seemingly we do. Mm. But yeah, that's zonal. And then never been a massive fan of zonal. Zones don't score goals. Spaces don't score goals. People do, so mark people. But yeah, Højbjerg on a back post. I've looked at it a couple of times on YouTube. I'm just like, I don't know what he's doing there. Franco, I just don't know. Seb, you got any ideas what he's doing there? Because there's no one on the front post. So is he caught out of position, or is he panicked a bit, or does he think it's going to go somewhere and he's gambled to beat? I don't know. I don't know why he's there.
No idea.
No, and the thing for me is he's the only player that can see Tony. But then yes. Tony's running into the box, so you're playing zonal, but somebody needs to pick up a man. It's just a weird concept that you're just going to stand there. And like they had Patrice Evra and Robbo on the BT Sport, and he was saying that at Juve, they used to play a similar system, but they'd have three people marking, like their three danger players that were in the box, and then the rest of them would be zonal marking. That makes far more sense. And obviously, if you've got somebody like Tony, who's 6 foot or whatever, he's going to be their main danger on that corner. And just nobody sticks with him. I just don't understand how you can let a player like that just walk into the easiest goal he's going to score this season.
It's obviously like normally we'd have someone like Kane near the front of the 6-yard box, the edge of the 6-yard box facing where the corner's coming from. And 9 times out of 10, he would probably get ahead in it. Or if Lucas, I've said this many times, Lucas at defending, because his jump is so good, his vertical leap is so good. Normally that ball doesn't come in. It's just, I don't understand how the guy gets the flick on near the front stick and then Tony, yeah, like ghosts into the back post and puts it in. It's a catalogue of errors. Just catalogue.
Yeah, he was.
It annoys me. But, sorry.
Yeah, the patron chat was pretty pessimistic at that point. I'm sure I saw some people saying, game over.
God, yeah, me. I said that. Game over. I said that.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
George, it did feel like it at that point. He was taking a sabbatical from Spurs, I think he said.
The thing is, you have all this time off, you come back all excited about Spurs, and then you're losing 2-0 like that, just two goals that could easily be avoided. It's frustrating, hard to take. But, you know, that's why we've got strong characters as Spurs fans. And then, lo and behold, we did start to get back into it. Decent cross from Clement Longley.
Oh, mate, did you look at the shape on that? Davo, if you're listening, this is what you get. This is what you get from a left-wide centre-back who can cross the ball. Hey, the shape on that was lovely. And then, like, me was underneath it. Little push in the back from Kane on me, personally. But it doesn't matter. Right back across the goal. That was a lovely header. That was a really, really nice header.
Yeah, right in the corner. I was very impressed with that. Classic Harry Kane, basically. And then it wasn't too long until Højbjerg's goal. And that was well taken, I thought, Seb. Very composed, anyway.
Yeah, fantastic. It was a good play from Kulusevski, wasn't it? Kind of got to the byline, came back on himself, found the man in space. And, good control from Højbjerg. And then just finding the inside of the side netting, if that makes sense. And also, I think we might disagree on this one, but I think we should have had a penalty. I know we're going to disagree on this one because obviously the Patreon. But I really think Spurs should have had a penalty with when Doherty went down. He did make a meal of it. It doesn't get away from the fact that he was clipped and there was no contact on the ball, and that's a penalty.
You talk about Kane going down or Doherty going down?
Doherty.
Well, there's There's both, isn't there? There's two penalty shouts. Paul, you don't think either of them were pens?
No.
Kane's was as well. Honestly, I've even forgot about that one. They were both penalties. To the point, my point with the Kane one is that later on in the game, I've forgotten the Spurs player. It might have been Bissouma, I think, wrestled Tony to the ground on the halfway line.
It was.
Very similar. Two arms round, Tony went down, and Bissouma got a yellow card, and it was a free kick. It was a yellow card and a free kick. That's exactly what Ben Mee did to Harry Kane in the box.
For about 3 seconds shorter, he had his arms around Kane. He had his arms around Kane for no more than half to three quarters of a second. I know he's not looking at the ball, Seb. I know he's not. Mate,
if I tell my missus, right, that I kissed another girl and it was only for not 3.5 seconds, do you think that's going to make a difference?
It's a fair argument, but I think that's probably what they looked at, because he's got one arm around him and then he lets go just as Kane starts to move, and then Kane goes down, doesn't he? And it's difficult because he's not looking at the ball, and you think a defender can't defend like that, not looking at the ball, just only caring about the player he's defending against. So for me, that's really 50-50. I think if the ref would have given it, then I don't think people would have argued too much. But at the same time, I don't think that's the sort of thing that VAR are going to overthrow. And the other one, it was the slightest of touches. And I think the fact he made a bit of a meal of it, Seb, don't you think?
Yes, he did make a meal of it, but it does that. That shouldn't matter. Shouldn't be that he's thrown himself to the ground. If he's clipped and he's falling, doesn't matter if he falls hard or soft, that's a penalty. I was very surprised that there was no, it was over before it had begun type of thing on the check. I was very surprised about that on both of them, actually. So, you know, maybe they had a little conversation and thought Kane's probably not quite ready yet for another penalty. We'll spare him that one on his first game back and spare all the Spurs fans watching it through their fingers. So who knows? But yeah, I thought at least one of those you could have expected to have got given.
Yeah. And then was it Zanka? What a Zanka. Wasn't he? He put his hand in Doherty's face, and I swear that thing was a yellow card, but I think he got away with that.
I said that in the Patreon chat. I thought that was yellow. I thought as soon as, you know, I'm all for a little bit getting in someone's grid and then giving them what have you, but you can't put your hand on someone's throat or cheek and then like that's a yellow. As far as I agree with you, Franco. As far as the rules are concerned, as I know them, that's a yellow card, and he seemed to get away with that for some reason.
Yeah. And then they've got Mbeumo's dive at the other end. Went straight on there. It's the best dive I've seen in absolutely ages. Proper swan dive, both legs up in the air. But you could see the regret, the fact he didn't even dare. He had his face in the grass, didn't want to look up, the shame. He's like, oh, I've messed this one up. Oh, that was great. And then we had that other chance, Kane hitting the crossbar, and then it nearly bounced over as well, Seb. It's like we had the chance to win it, we just couldn't quite do it.
Yeah, it was very close. I think the commentators did say on while I was watching that there's one team going to win this now. There was a big momentum shift. To be fair, barring the first half an hour, I would say Spurs looked to attack more, and the attacks did flow. Look, when Kulusevski's on the pitch, you always fancy your chances. Obviously, we've got Kane, but someone will probably dig me out on this. I think I'm yet to see Kulusevski have a bad game. Yeah, he's such a threat, and you know he gets you excited. You always think you're in with a chance. I think another 5-10 minutes. If the game had gone on, I would expect us to win. However, saying that, it was quite open. Yeah, I think Brentford had the chance as well, didn't they? With Tony and Forster did well, kind of came out, made himself big, and Tony blazed it over. But look, it was a good game. That's the long and short of it. But I think it raises a lot of. Well, I say it raises a lot of questions. It doesn't. It repeats the questions that we kind of already knew. We haven't got a very good defence. There's no leader there. When we try and go forward, we can score goals, but it does come at a cost of leaving ourselves quite open. I've read today that we're not going to spend a lot of money in January. Pedro Porro is the target for right wing back. I wouldn't be looking at right wing back, and I know a lot of people would disagree with me. We've got three, for fuck's sake. You know, and Doherty is okay. I think he's a 6 or 7 out of 10 Premier League player. He's no great shakes, but I'd carry on with him. And we need a fucking centre back, like quite urgently, I would say. Someone who can play in kind of any of the positions across the three, and they do exist. I'd say that is our key area that we should be going for, but I've not heard any names mentioned. I don't know if it's a priority, but that's I'd be looking at getting a couple of centre backs out and getting one very good one in.
Yeah, there's very little rumours about at the moment, which is probably a bit of a concern because it feels like not a lot is going to happen, if I'm honest. I mean, like you said, who have we been linked to? Nobody, really.
No, it's Pedro Porro. That is pretty much the only name that I've seen. And I think other clubs will, you know, we've already seen, I know it's Wolves, it doesn't really affect us, but they've gone and spent 50 million on a midfielder from Atletico. I think clubs will make moves in this transfer window, and I don't want us to get caught. I think we've got a good squad. The problem we've had this season is we have not had a fully fit squad ever at all. I raised the point on the Patreon today when the team was announced, is how often has Conte had to select three out of four for the attacking roles? Pretty much never. You know, either Kulusevski, Son, or Richarlison has been injured pretty much on a rota basis. You know, it's only Kane that's touch wood has stayed fit. So I think, like I say, you know, if you got Lucas on the bench, it gives you something different. Same with some of the defenders where we've had injuries and stuff. But it, you know, Conte's not wrong. It does need strengthening, and obviously that takes you onto his contract situation. And I think he's obviously playing a very clever game. I don't think there'll be any contract at all for either Conte or Kane before the end of the season. They'll want to see where we end up. I fear that if we don't spend money, we ain't going to end up where we all want to end up.
Yeah, I don't like these situations because obviously it must breed a bit of uncertainty within the team. It can't be great for team spirit when you've not got a manager completely committed or your star player completely committed. So it's, again, we're not in a brilliant situation.
Well, the story was they offered Conte an extra £1 million a year to sign an extra year. That was all. And it was like, no, not at the moment. Which is, you know, it's not money. I mean, he's I think he's second best paid manager in the league anyway. So,
yeah,
it will be, can I win something? And at the moment, you know, you'd have to say it is a way off. Top four is not winning something in my book. Look, that's a debate for another day. And he won't be satisfied with that. And neither should we be. You know, we've had this conversation a lot, but the facilities are there. The money is there to really, really strengthen. I think if Conte could see that there was a gradual improvement, like you've got an end goal and this is how we're going to get to it. We're going to spend this money then and this money then. You can't just do it all in one go. Even Newcastle are showing that. You don't splurge it all in one go. But I'm not sure there is something that we can see is Jed Spence issue and things like that. There's still a disconnect. You know, he should be able to say in January, right, I need this and this, and you need to move out, not loan, you need to sell X and Y, and then we move forward. And I don't think he's in a position where that's happening. And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, and I think we all know it. Every single fan knows it. Is that you just need to give the manager what he wants. Otherwise, he's not going to stay. And the thing that upsets me now is that, like I just said, with Kane as well in that same situation, now is the time for the board to do something, to show some of that ambition, hate the term, but we need to spend some money. We need to plug those gaps. We need to find some players that are going to make a difference to this squad. And if Conte wants players now, then you have to get them.
It's continual as well. This is the thing that does wind me up, and I'm not Enoch in or Enoch out or any, I'm not getting involved in any of that. It's that really the development of the squad and the team you should always be striving to improve. So there's no argument to say, oh, well, Levy went to Lewis in the summer and he got him 150 million and we got Bissouma and we got Richarlison, whatever. That was then. You've got to now look at where we are right now and go, well, we're a little, maybe, you know, position wise, we may be a little bit where we expected to be, but performance-wise, I think we can all agree we're a little bit off, right? It hasn't clicked yet. It's not there. Do I think it'll get better in the season? Yeah, I think it probably will. I think when we get a full squad like we had at the back end of last season, look, it's horrible, but we're probably going to need to drop out of all the other competitions, focus on the Premier League again like we did last season, and I think we'll get a nice little run together. But that's not good enough. There's no improvement there. You know, that's you're sacrificing something again, and look, you know, there has to be, you, like I said, you have to be improving all the time. Every transfer window, every game, every squad needs to be better than last year. And I think if you're Conte, you probably look at it and go, no, not quite. We're just treading water almost.
Yeah. There's no point getting one of the best managers, paying him all that money, and then not giving him the tools that he needs to do the job. I fully agree with that now. It's just stupid because you're just throwing money at him. And then when it doesn't work out, he'll leave. And then we'll just get another manager and you just repeat the cycle.
And what happens if that manager doesn't want the players that you've gone and got for the present incumbent of the job?
Yeah, but you can't say we're building a squad or like, you know, a system of players coming through that are going to, you know, work. Any manager that comes in has to work with all these young, talented players, because we don't even really buy young, talented players either, do we? We just take punts.
I agree with it. Look, I think we do buy some young, talented players, but I think we do take punts. You know, Bentancur and Kulusevski are undoubtedly a punt. Now, they're a punt that bloody paid off, you know, barring Kane. I'd say they're our two best players. So, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But this is, go back to my point, I can't see the plan. You know, there's not a Liverpool, I think for us, are a similar club. They don't go out and spend loads of money. I guess they did in the summer with Nunez, but he was a targeted player. They targeted him. That is who they wanted. It wasn't, we can't find anyone else, or there's 3 days left of the transfer window. Fans are going to be upset if we don't spend any money. Oh, we'll go for him. He's available. It was, that is who we want. That is who we're going to go and get. I can't see that happening at Spurs, and it hasn't happened for years. I can't remember it happening. So, you know, even some of the best signings we've made, Van der Vaart, you know, that was not a targeted signing. That was a phone call at 10 to midnight. You know, this is the problem. And I think if you're Conte, you can't get away from that. You know, and the fact that he doesn't seem to have control over who comes in is a problem. Sorry, I've rambled again, but it's important.
Well, we say that, but he said he was happy with all the players that we signed. He's never really moaned about that, apart from obviously Spence, the way he's treated him. You know, but he brought Bissouma in really slowly. We talked about all these things. There seems to be a disconnect between Conte saying he's happy with things and the way he acts as well sometimes in the team selection. So it's all a bit strange.
I find it very, very difficult if I was on the Enic board to back someone who's not committed to us at this point in time. Mm. I think that's what it comes down to. I think that's a major problem, is that he's not committed. And therefore, well, you know, and that's, you've probably seen that in some of the performances, as you mentioned 10, 15 minutes ago, Franco, was like, you know, it must be hard to like motivate yourself and really go to the very, very, you know, to the very edge of your abilities to, for a manager who might not be here, you know, in X amount of time. It's, and the board probably think the same. Why should we back you if you can't even commit to us? It's a balancing act. It's a balancing act.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that in terms of the players. Maybe with the board, you've got a point. I think but as a player, all the noise is coming out of every player is how they've improved, how our training sessions are different, how you know, he's so determined and he's put that will to win in. And I think you can see that, to be fair. I don't think you come back from some of the pickles that we've got ourselves in unless you're playing for the manager. I think with the board, I think you've got a point. I think it's a bit of a chicken and egg scenario. Do you spend the money to back the manager, or do you, you know, yeah, I get what you're saying. You know, you don't want to spend 50 million quid on a player that the manager targets if the manager's going to be gone in 6 months. The only question I would ask is, I don't know if we've covered this before, is this year extension. That's not automatic, is it? There is a year extension on the table if Conte wants it. Is that right? In which case, what's the point of it?
Yeah, it seems a bit weird, doesn't it?
Does anyone actually know how it works?
I don't know these contract situations, to be honest. I assumed it was going to be eventually kind of like, if you want to stay for a year, it's a year. If you don't, then ciao. That's what I thought it was, but I could be wrong.
Which is weird because, well, working contracts, normally it's just you've agreed the terms of that deal and then you can extend it by a further year, but it has to be mutually agreeable by both parties, obviously. So it just is a bit pointless. It just means, oh, we don't have to renegotiate. We can just say, do you want it? Yes, cool. And that's it. But maybe it's like Levy protecting himself. don't want to offer him a long-term contract that we then have to cancel and pay out for. So this extension is like a way of avoiding that situation. Anyway, I'm looking forward to getting back to the lane on New Year's Day. Villa, didn't they? They lost to Liverpool today, Paul. Looking forward to that game?
I am. It's going to be good. Be nice to get back. It seems a long time since we were there. I didn't go to the boxing or anything like that. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to taking a tube to Seven Sisters and then like going to the Polish shop, get my mints and my bottle of water, and then walk to Seven Sisters and you know, might meet yourself or anybody else who's around. Let me know on Twitter or come and join Patreon and we can meet up. But no, I am looking forward to the game. And I think, you know, the way that Emery's got like Villa kind of set up and stuff, you know, Ollie Watkins is good. He only got a couple of good players, but at the back, they're not that great shakes. So it should be a good game. Should be goals, as they say, goals.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was actually trying to give you an opportunity to moan about not getting your ticket for the Nice game then.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, I think it was my fault. I think I might have put the wrong email address in. Anyway, I might have put .co.uk instead of .com. I think.
How could you? Oh, I suppose. Yeah, maybe. All right. Well, Diver didn't get his ticket until late as well. Either way, Spurs, sort it out. Sure, you took it out. You had a month off and couldn't even sort out tickets for Nice properly. You watched that game, didn't you? The thing I was interested in was because you were saying Sarr played quite well, weren't you?
Yes. I thought Sarr was decent. I thought Sarr was decent against us at Senate, in the World Cup as well. I think he's got a good pass on him. I think he's always scanning. And as Hoddle used to say, he knows what he's going to do with the ball before he gets it. You can tell. He opens his body out really well. He's got really good feet. And I thought he played really well against Nice when he came on. He started, I think, against Nice. And I think he's what you see of these players, you know, here, there, and everywhere. But he looked really decent.
But I think he offers something slightly different to our other midfield options. I know he's very young still, but it's just I'm wondering whether we're likely to see him before the end of the season.
No, of course, we won't see him. We haven't seen Jed Spence. You know, you set me up beautifully here, Franco. You've absolutely teed this up, you utter cunt. You've just like dropped that lure in front of me, and I've gone hook, line, and sinker for it. No, we won't see him. We probably won't see Jed Spence for him. If I was Jed Spence, I'd get a loan out of Tottenham as quick as possible for my own career. No, we will not see Sarr as a starting midfielder unless there's an injury crisis before the end of this season.
Can I add something to that? Because someone asked me a really interesting question in the week and it does link into that. And I'm not here to debate like the merits of Maurizio Pochettino, but someone asked me, with our last two main managers, obviously, not our last two because I'm forgetting about Nuno, but with Jose and Conte, if they'd taken the reins in 2014 when Poch did, do you think we would have seen Dele Alli, Eric Dier, Harry Kane? Or do you think, based on how the teams that they put out now, they would have been sent out on loan or not got in the team or on the bench but never playing, a la Jed Spence, Harvey White, Sarr, Gill, all the other kids that we have, even Skip, that perhaps we want to see and don't?
That's an interesting one. It really is. I think Dele might have been the one who might have been seen a bit too petulant for Jose, certainly. I think because you look at the way he handled him when he came in. So I'm not sure about that. Dier, because he speaks Portuguese, I think he would have been fine.
answer your question.
Now under Seb. Conte.
Under Conte, no.
It's worrying, actually, isn't it? It is worrying that
we've evolved, and that's what you get. It's we're going over old ground here, but we haven't got a manager who's going to bring through young talent. He hasn't done it much in his past career. He's done it here and there a little bit, but he had a world class Eden Hazard at Chelsea, who was absolutely on fire that season. That's why he won. This is just what we get with Conte. He's not going to bring young talent through. Spence, Destiny, next season, Harvey Wyatt, Pepe Mata Sarr, who spoke about it, they're not going to play. And that's just one of the downsides. They're a little bit like collateral damage at the moment with having Antonio Conte. And we take great pride, don't we, when we find a Dele Alli or we bring someone through, they're one of our own or this kind of, you know, as a fan base, we love that, but it's not going to happen under Antonio Conte, in my opinion.
And is that a bad thing?
Yes, in my opinion as well, it's a bad thing because I love seeing young talent come through. I love being able to say, look, you know, we brought him through from a 13, 14, 15 year old. That's why I want to see a bit more of Skip. That's why I know Cess is not our product, but I want to see like Cess really, really take his chance. He's not going to, but yeah, I personally, for me, I like seeing young talent come through and take their chance. And but they've got to be given that chance in the first place, and Conte's not doing it. So I think it's a bad thing.
Agreed. Right, on that note, listen out for the YouTube guys. I think they're doing a YouTube as we speak, live now. So if you haven't caught up with that, after you listen to this, you want to get a slightly different opinion for the rest of the Cheeseheads, then get involved in that at YouTube. They'll obviously be doing their review of the... Oh, I'm going to say that. We'll be obviously doing a review of the boxings of the...
Keep it in, Franco. Come on, Franco. Come on, Franco.
It's the first time back in ages. What do you expect? We'll be doing a review of the New Year's Day game, probably with slightly cloudy heads as well. So look out for that. And then obviously there'll be loads of games in the new year coming thick and fast. Loads to talk about. Back in action. So... let me just say thank you, Mr. Paul Muir, for joining.
Yeah, sorry, as I've just switched over to Amazon on my laptop there, and Arsenal are now winning 3-1, unfortunately.
What? You looked about 5 minutes ago.
Saka, Martinelli, and Eddie Nketiah, 3-1. But yeah, so sorry to bring it down, but we could maybe get edit this bit out. But yeah, good to be back on. Enjoy chatting, always, to you two guys. And yeah, onwards and forwards.
Bah humbug. Right, Seb, cheers for joining, mate.
No problem. I've missed it, to be honest. It is quite cathartic talking through, even when Spurs are poor or great or whatever. But I've missed you guys, so good to be back.
Right, thanks ever so much for listening, as always, Cheeseheads. Special Daniel Markin keeps us on the ball, make sure we put out these pods. It's good to have patrons that are keen to listen to us. And also thanks, I want to say a big thank you to all the patrons. It's been a great year. We've built a real sort of community, and I love all of you. Right, until next time, come on you Spurs.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance, and you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.